Got employee relations to order. About three or four issues to look at this morning. And I think that's a review of the interim collective bargaining agreements. This should complete them all. Is that correct, Mr. Huminger? Or do we have?
Mr. Chair and members, this would be the rest of the contracts that are negotiated by Dewar.
Dewar, yeah.
We still have the contracts that are being negotiated by Minsky.
Okay, yeah. I guess I knew that. Without objection, we'll take a motion to approve the minutes of Representative Bigham moves the minutes of the August 28th meeting. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Now we get right into the collective bargaining agreements. We have the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, Council 5, Unit 225. Do you present those, or do we have a...
Mr. Chair, Commissioner Anderson and Deputy Commissioner Larson are here to present the contracts.
Okay. Good morning and welcome to the committee, and you may proceed as you wish.
Morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm pleased to report to you and to bring you today the settled agreements of four more Dewar-initiated bargaining units and the Commissioner and Managerial Plan. I should note that we still have outstanding the law enforcement and the nurses. And
I
suspect those will be here sometime after the first of the year.
But you'll get those done, I'm sure. All right.
We're trying, Mr.
Okay.
Chair. The Radio Communications Operations Operators Unit is represented by ASME. This unit consists of 69 employees from the Department of Public Safety. It's an essential unit, and their job responsibilities are focused on dispatching state law enforcement officers who respond to 911 calls. Now, the State Residential Schools Association is a unit of about 180 licensed teachers who are employed by the Minnesota Academy for the Deaf and Blind, the Purpose Center for Arts Education, the Department of Human Services, and the Department of Corrections. Minnesota Government Engineers Council is our unit of about 875 registered professional engineers who are predominantly located at the Department of Transportation, Natural Resources, and the PCA. Middle Management Association is our unit of about 2,700 supervisors through all of the executive branch. Now, in general, the compensation for the labor agreements and pay plans before you fall within the same parameters as our previous labor agreements. The insurance provisions are identical to the previous agreements with respect to plan design and premium costs. They also fall within our budget targets in the amount of money that was appropriated by yourselves. As you would expect with the negotiated settlements, there are a few unique provisions, and at this time I'd like to call on Paul Larson, who is our state negotiator, to help explain those provisions to you. Paul?
Sure. Welcome, Mr. Deputy Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Paul Larson. I'm the state negotiator. I'm pleased to be able to be here before you today with these four voluntary settlements with these units. Three of these units are essential units and had the right to go to interest arbitration. In spite of that, we were able to reach a voluntary settlement. I'd like to just to recapture what Commissioner Anderson said with regard to the uniquenesses of each one of the settlements. While we do have our what I would consider principles with respect to our bargaining goals, there are some unique features to this. The radio communications operators, which is a new essential unit that was established, I think, two legislative sessions ago. This provides for the 3.25% across-the-board increase in July of each year. It provides for the performance increases of step increases for this unit. The average step for this unit is 2.9%. There are 32 employees that are currently at the maximum of their salary ranges, and 37 of these employees would be eligible for the additional step increase. We've also increased the shift differential from 60 cents an hour to 65 cents an hour. In addition to that, we've also recognized a new supervisory, or I should say training officer differential for employees in this bargaining unit that assume training responsibilities for new hires. The new money for this unit, the total cost in new money, is $450,000. It's a relatively small unit. The State Residential Schools Education Association is our educational unit that has teachers through the various state facilities. This also provides, I think, for a very unique settlement, which is that the 3.25% will be on January 9th of 2008, which in a sense they took a six-month delay in the implementation of this 3.25%. With that six-month delay, what we were able to do is take $1,000 and put that $1,000 for each member of this unit into a health care savings account that will be administered by the Minnesota State Retirement System. In addition to that, we have also increased the employer contribution to the health care savings account from $300 to $400, or an additional $100 in the second year of the agreement. We have also increased our employer contribution of deferred comp each year, in the second year of this agreement, from $75 to $100. They're also, those people that are not at the top of the salary range are also eligible for performance increases. These increases for this unit are approximately 3.37%. There are 91 people that are at the max and 89 people that are within the salary range that would be eligible for the performance increases. New money for this unit is $1.6 million in new money. The Minnesota Government Engineers Council provides for the people that are the licensed professional engineers in the state. They're predominantly located at the Minnesota Department of Transportation, the Department of Natural Resources, and the Pollution Control Agency. We have, for this unit, and they are an essential unit, we've reached a voluntary settlement of 3.25% each year. The first year is a slight delay, which would be until July 11th, as opposed to July 1st. With this slight delay, we have increased our deferred comp contribution from $200 a year to $300 a year in the second year of the agreement. It also provides, I think, also for a unique feature in this, and that is that through the years we've explored various options in the area of our severance pay. And with this unit, our current formula provides for 40% of the first 900 hours of sick leave that you earn, and then after that, it's 12.5% for every hour that you earn after that. There's been criticism that the more you earn, the less you are recognized for. We balance that in respect to our goals in trying to reach the across-the-board settlement. And so what we agreed to at this unit, and that is that rather than having this two-tiered formula, we're going to have a flat 35% of everything. There are some winners, obviously. There are some losers in this proposition, but generally speaking, we think this is a way for us to move into in the future, and having this flat rate in the severance pay. The Minnesota Government Engineers Council took the big step, and that was the first unit in reaching this voluntary settlement for us to be able to do that. That would be effective in the first pay period in January. There are 568 employees that are currently at the maximum of their salary scale. 309 are within the salary range, which would then be eligible for the performance increase. Total new costs of money for this contract for the state will be about $8.1 million in new money. That brings us to our final settlement, which is the Middle Management Association, which is our supervisory unit. This also is our essential unit, and we were pleased that we were able to reach a voluntary settlement with this unit. This has a slight delay. They're falling into the 3.25%, similar to our other voluntary settlements. This provides for a 3.25% on July 11th as opposed to July 1st, and a 3.25% on July 1st in the second year of the agreement. With this slight delay, what we were able to do is increase the amount of pay that we pay for our supervisors when they're in on-call. We currently have a lump sum formula that we pay for the supervisors that are on-call. We've increased that from $45 for every 24-hour period to $50. And then in addition to that, we also have supervisors that are on call for a week in its duration, and that went from $280 to $350. In addition to that, we also increased the employer contribution to deferred comp in the second year of the agreement, which provides currently our employer contribution is $200, and now in the second year of this agreement, that will increase to $300. Consistent with our other negotiated settlements, we also have increased our shift differential from 60 cents an hour to 65 cents an hour. The total new money for the middle management agreement is $25.7 million. So those are really what I would call the major significant economic provisions that I think that would be important for you to know. We also, I think, again, resolved a lot of what I consider to be language issues in the bargaining table. I think these are very mature and responsible settlements. I think that from an employer perspective, we've retained our management rights to be able to operate our organization, but I also think it's important to stress that we've recognized the issues that labor has brought to the bargaining table, and I think we've responded to them in a very responsible and appropriate manner.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to also recognize the unions. Most of them are here in the room, and the representatives of the management team for their collaboration on these contracts. We can respond to any questions that you may have, and we also have Nathan Morocco of our State Employee Group Insurance Program here if you have any insurance questions, but they are the same insurance provisions as we presented last time.
And Commissioner Anderson, I know you said it, but we'll say it again. This is all balanced with the appropriations we made, so the budgeting here is in line with what the Senate House budgeted for. Is that
they
correct?
They are, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, that's important for everybody to know that we're. And it sounds like you're about at 3% on most of these, or right in there?
3.25.
Okay. Is that a 2-year cycle? Is it 3.2 for 2 years?
Mr. Chair, that's each year.
For the 2 years.
We should recognize that about half of our state employees are at the maximum of their salary range at this point.
Also. Okay. Any questions of the presenters? Sounds like you did a pretty good job. It's a lot of work here. Representative DeLaForest.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. The plans look great. I've sat now through three terms, and we've had good times and bad negotiating these contracts. And my congratulations to both labor and management. But refresh my memory, Mr. Larson, does this seal up everything? Are we all done now, or are there still contracts outstanding now? And if so, could you maybe give us an update on where we are with those?
They kind of mentioned the two that are still hanging out there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine. That's fine. That's not bad to hear it again.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dale Forrest, from the employee, from DUER perspective only, we have two labor agreements that are still open. We have the Minnesota Nurses Association, where we have put our final offer out, and the nurses are taking that out for a vote right now. I'm somewhat disappointed that they are, and our offer, I think, mirrors close to what we're bringing before you today. There are, I think, some issues that we're addressing. The Nurses Association has recommended to reject that contract, so I don't know where that's going. They're an essential unit, so if it's rejected, we'll go to interest arbitration. We have also put an offer out to the Minnesota Law Enforcement Association, and we're in the process right now of scheduling a date with the Bureau of Mediation Services for a mediation session. So those are our two agreements.
Okay. All right. Do we... we should have a motion, I suppose, to ratify this or to agree to this.
Is this it?
Oh, okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yeah.
Before the motion,
yes.
If I could ask a question. Did you do the health assessment thing to all of these employees as well, so that if they don't participate in the counseling sessions, that they don't get the $5 off?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, yes. Everyone is treated the same.
Mr. Chair?
Yes. Representative Hilsen.
Do you know how much money that is going to save the state? Do you have any cost benefit yet on this, sir? I tend not to be in favor of where we are, and this year chose not to do my health assessment, even though I did it last year. But so I'm curious as to what financial benefit we're getting from this.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I was just told we don't know yet, so the numbers aren't in completely.
Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When do you think you'll know?
Okay.
How do you know that?
Yeah. A couple weeks, we expect.
Okay. Mr. Chair, hopefully the next time we meet, we can get those numbers.
Okay, good. Senator, Representative Bingham has a resolution to make. I don't think we have to.
I'll move to ratify the agreements with A through D on our form here.
Okay, everybody comfortable with that? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Good work. We're next going to hear from Mr. Howard Vicker, the Executive Director of the State Board of Investment. Investment Salary Administration Plan. Mr. Vicker, welcome to the committee, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Howard Vicker. I'm the Director of the State Investment Board. A little over 2 years ago, the State Board put in place a salary administration plan approved by this this commission. Because it's a new plan, we figured there'd be some technical issues, and we found one technical issue related to the ranges that we have in place for non-represented staff positions in the State Board of Investment, and that is they are not escalated like every other range in state government. We forgot to put the, so most ranges, if you negotiate a contract, the ranges kind of move. Our ranges were, we didn't put that provision in. So all we're asking for is a technical change in our salary administration plan to allow for those ranges to move along with the CPIU. So, Mr. Chairman and members, all we're asking for is a minor technical correction in our salary administration plan.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that.
Okay. Senator, Representative Bingham.
Never mind. Sorry.
Do we have copies of the amendment? Is it in here?
Okay.
Mr. Chair and members.
What are we doing here?
Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Yeah, that's not a bad. We have put a lot of trust in you, Mr. Vicker, but some of us have to have it spelled out, okay?
The way that this proposed change would be implemented would be for the subcommittee to amend their plan that's been submitted to us. And that provision is included as SER2 along with the other two compensation plans that we'll be hearing about in a minute.
Okay. So this has been reviewed by Dewar and
yes, Mr. Chairman, it has.
Okay, any
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Chair, I would hold my motion, and I didn't see it on that.
Okay. Oh, it just deserves just a little bit of more discussion. Go ahead, Mr. Hubinger.
Mr. Chair and members, as provided in law, the State Board of Investment submitted this proposed revised plan to the Department of Employee Relations for their review. The department supports the change but recommends that this plan be submitted every 2 years like all other contracts and plans are.
That in this amendment, that it comes back, or the review part?
Mr. Chair, I've drafted an amendment that would make that change.
Okay. Are you aware of that, Mr. Vicker, and you understand that?
Mr. Chairman and members, that's fine with us.
That it comes back for review, and
right
it'd be all right.
Right now, change we'd have to make, we'd have to come to you. If you would like us to come every 2 years, that's fine with us.
Mr. Chair,
I think that only makes sense.
Mr. Chair, I can read the amendment.
Okay.
The amendment would read, the director will submit this plan each biennium for review by the Commissioner of Employee Relations. If the director proposes changes to this plan, the director will follow the process described in Minnesota Statutes 2007, Section 43A.18, Subdivision 3B.
Mr. Chairman and members, I have no idea what all those initials mean, but I assume it's
My only question.
You're probably not alone.
My only question about staff's amendment is it does directly State Commissioner of Employee Relations, and I do believe that department was going to be is going to be phased out, so who would then be taking care of that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bigham, my memory is that this department by June 30th of 2008 will be merged. Most functions will be merged with the Department of Finance. But I understand that there's language in the statute that says that Department of Finance will assume all of those responsibilities.
Okay. All right. I didn't mean any disrespect, Commissioner. I just had to bring it up. Okay.
Okay. The reason I've hesitated is because Senator also tried to make that motion, but we got to...
No. Mr. Chairman, I think vote on the amendment, and then you still got two more to hear the plan before we
okay,
do
the on the motion by Representative Bigham. All those in favor, should have ever seen
aye. Aye.
Aye.
Opposed. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Okay.
Does this do this?
The two compensation plans.
Okay. Welcome back, folks. Got two more plans to look at here. You may proceed.
Mr. Chair, would you like me to take them one at a time?
Or? Yeah, why don't you tell us?
Mr. Chair, we'll start with the Commissioner's Compensation Plan. This plan is an internal doer plan, but it does follow the same general outline and parameters as the negotiated plans have. It establishes the terms and conditions for about 1,000 employees who are determined confidential under POWRA or employees who are severed from the supervisory bargaining unit. These are the law enforcement supervisors from the State Patrol and the Division of Enforcement with the Department of Natural Resources. In addition, the Commissioner's plan includes an appendix that establishes the terms and conditions of employment for 65 medical specialists or doctors of medicine, including psychiatrists, who are employed in the Department of Human Services, Health, Corrections, and Veterans Board. And I will turn it over to Mr. Sure. Larson to explain the details.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Larson.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, the Commissioner's plan, as described by Commissioner Anderson, also provides for the 3.25% across-the-board increase July of both years. In addition, there's a unique feature that we've put together for the Commissioner Plan employees, which is the creation of a performance pool as opposed to the step increases that you've heard described in our negotiated settlements with our unions. This performance pool takes the amount of money that would normally have been set aside for the step increases and defines this in an aggregate amount, and it is provided to the agencies. And the agencies then can, based on performance standards, decide what the amount of money will be for those Commissioner Plan employees will be with respect to their performance increases. It is only available for the people that are not at the top of their salary range, but as opposed to what is sometimes defined to as a fixed amount in our negotiated settlements, it creates this performance pool. In my opinion, Mr. Chairman, this is what I would call the purest sense of recognizing performance that we can provide for the Commissioner plan. And we've also done this for the managerial plan, so I'll consider that I've only explained this concept to him once. But I think it's important to share that the costs for this would be the same amount of money if we would give each one of the Commissioner plan or managerial plan employees the 3.5% performance increase. So there's no additional money going into this group, but rather we're telling the agencies it's their responsibility to, if they want to, be creative. And so if they give someone, a 5% increase, it might be that someone may not get a 3.5% increase. And so it's going to recognize the performance. Continuing on, there are approximately, as Commissioner Anderson said, 1,100 employees in this unit. 554 are currently at the salary max, so they would not be eligible for this increase. They will get the 3.25%, but the people that are eligible for the performance pool, 510 employees would be eligible for that pool. This also has the same feature as the Minnesota Government Engineers Council, which is the 35% applies to the DNR enforcement supervisors and the State Patrol supervisors. One of the things that we did with this group is we conducted surveys this time. We conducted a survey with the commissioner plan and managerial plan employees, and that helped us, I think, in some of the decision. It wasn't a vote, but it really gave us, I think, a sense of direction of where we want to go. But what it does provide is it provides for the creation of a new 1% employee contribution to a health care savings account starting in July of 2008. So in other words, employees will have deducted from their salary the 1% taken out of their salary into a health care savings account, which will then be used for unreimbursed medical expenses when they retire or leave state service. It also provides for an increase in the supplemental retirement account for MNSCU, which is they have a supplemental retirement account for some of their commissioner plan employees, which is increasing that by $100 each year. And in addition to that, we also have for medical specialists. We do have some serious concerns out there, and so what we did with medical specialists with respect to market issues is that we, instead of the 3.25% each year, we gave the ability to do the potential of a 6.5% starting in July of first year. So we, the percent is the same. The potential of providing that as an up to, so some agencies that may not, like the Veterans Homes Board or Corrections, has that flexibility if they want to engage in that type of a compensation practice. The total cost for the commissioner's plan is about $10 million in new money.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheidt.
Mr. Chairman, may I ask on the medical specialist, what's the typical compensation or salary, I should probably should say, for those doctors?
Mr. Chair, Senator Scheidt, the average salary for our medical specialists right now is about $90 an hour.
Which, Mr. Chairman, do the math for me.
What is that? 170, maybe.
Well, there's 2,088 hours, so about $90 an hour.
180,000.
Oh, okay. Okay. Thank you.
Could that 1% set aside on that health care, is that could that be used for a long-term care costs? You go to a nursing home or something?
Do you know? It's the, Mr. Chair, this is the program that's administered currently by MSRS, where folks, when they retire, they'll put their sick leave into that account.
Okay.
So it would be a question for MSRS.
Yeah, we've got to somehow, someday,
Mr. Chair,
put some more resources in that area or try to encourage people to... And we have it like a tax credit if you do it, but it's like $100. But I keep thinking we ought to increase that to encourage, you know, if it costs the state or whoever $50,000-$60,000 a year for somebody in a nursing home, and if we could somehow start thinking about how we can do something in that area as legislators to save all the taxpayers a ton of dough at the end of the day. But that's a little philosophical.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Worgen.
Mr. Chair, unless I'm mistaken, that can be used to pay the health, the insurance premiums for long-term care insurance after one retires.
Okay, I did. That's what I'm trying to get at. I guess I didn't
ask
the question properly. But
is that,
is that true, Mr. Bicker? I mean, that's,
yes.
You know. Okay, that's good to know. That's you framed it better than I did. Thank you. Okay. We've got, I'm aware of an amendment, something that maybe somebody can explain at the scale. Ms. Olson from the Campaign Finance Board, are you familiar with it? Or Mr. Hubinger, you want to tell the committee what, I think everybody's looked, or not everybody, I think Moore and other people have signed off on this. Is it in their packets? Or? Oh, I'm sorry. I guess I...
Senator
Mr. Hubinger will tell the committee members and those listening what the amendment does. Here's one. I think it's been worked on, but let's talk about it anyway.
Mr. Chair and members, Senator Metzen's office and our office were contacted a couple of weeks ago by an employee who's covered by the managerial plan, which I'm going to be described here momentarily. The Department of Employee Relations is proposing to change that plan to change the way that severance pay is calculated, so that instead of paying severance based on 40% of the first 900 hours of sick leave and 12.5% of the sick leave balance above that, that instead severance pay would be calculated based on 35% of the entire balance. There is at least one manager who is planning to retire in the very near future who had based her retirement plans based on the formula that's in the plan currently, and is adversely affected by this change. And they had requested, if possible, that the implementation of this provision be delayed by a few weeks so that they could implement the retirement plans as they had planned under the current language of the managerial plan. As a result, we've drafted an amendment to that plan that basically gives managers the choice of the new language or the language that's in the current plan. And I understand that this language is acceptable to the department.
Do you have a comment?
Mr. Chair, maybe I can also help clarify. This is the amendment is for the managerial plan, which is next in the agenda. The commissioner's plan does not include that change in sick leave provision except for law enforcement supervisors. And the date that that is effective is also the January 1. We're okay with the amendment, but then I would suggest maybe, I don't know if anyone's planning on retiring in January in the law enforcement, but maybe we want to also include that for these few law enforcement supervisors that are going to be affected by the commissioner's plan, which is on that we're.
Mr. Huebinger.
Mr. Chair and members, the item one on the amendment does amend the managerial plan. Item two, which begins about three quarters of the way down the page, amends the commissioner's plan. We had picked up on the fact that this plan covers medical specialists, which also has this change in severance, but we did not remember that it covers the DNR or the enforcement supervisors. So it would be appropriate to amend this amendment to indicate that the language in provision 2 would say amend the commissioner's plan, Appendix N, medical specialist addendum to the commissioner's plan, and the enforcement supervisor's provisions as follows.
Thank you. This would, Mr. Chair, essentially give them a month to, because it's the middle of December already, if people are planning on retiring, it would give them an extra month to make a decision what they wanted to retire under.
No, we're okay.
So that makes, for anyone that's close.
Well, this doesn't open any floodgates, or does it?
No.
Mr. Huebinger.
Mr. Chair and members, and we point out that, as indicated earlier in the hearing, that labor contracts are negotiated where you have both employees and management negotiating benefits and when they're implemented for these compensation plans. The Department of Employee Relations basically establishes them, and there isn't the give and take with employees. Most of the contracts that have this provision for this change in severance have that implementation being the middle of January, so there's a little bit of time. But by serendipity, these two plans, by chance, are having this change happen January 1st, so there isn't much time for employees to make this change. And so by giving them a month, that gives them some chance making this transition.
Okay.
Move this.
Senator Scheid.
Chairman, I move. These amendments.
What was the amendments?
And would include the enforcement supervisors, the language that Mr. Huebinger.
Any further discussion on that?
Mr. Chair, just a question. We're also adding some language, separation and discharge following five or more years. That just looks like this parallel language to 20 and 10. Is that's the only reason that's included?
I don't know.
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator,
Mr. Chairman, is that the language we've already done?
Yeah.
I think that looks like law that happened. I think the bold words are the new, what we're doing here, right?
Mr. Chair and members, the language that is underlined in normal text or font is what is otherwise being proposed for change by the department.
Right.
This amendment would do is proposed in bold underline so we can distinguish.
Okay. Anybody? Representative De La Forest.
Let's keep it straight, Mr. Chairman. I think what we need to do then is offer an amendment to the amendment as proposed by Mr. Hubinger, correct, to include the DNR. So I'd go ahead and move the amendment to the...
He incorporated it.
Oh, he incorporated. All right. So we're on the amendment. All right. Thank you.
She incorporated that in her...
Thanks.
Well, good point. Any further discussion on the Shade Amendment? All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails. What else we got with you guys?
Now we got to prove the plans.
The plan.
Mr. Chair, we have the managerials plan next. It will be fairly brief. There are 1,270 managers approximately affected by this plan. It follows, again, many of the same parameters as the commissioner's plan, but there are a few minor changes, and I'll turn it over to Mr. Larson to quickly go over those.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as you just amended, this does provide for the new 35% formula, which would be then the dual option for the 1 month. But it, I think, is a feature that we're very pleased of moving in that direction. It also provides for the creation of the 1% for the employee contribution into the health care savings account, 1% of their salary, effective July 9th of 2008. In addition to that, we've also rewritten the dispute resolution procedure. There were some changes made in 43A, I think, 2 years ago, and it was what I consider to be a major rewrite in the sense of making it more discernible, more understandable for the employees. There were no substantive changes with respect to employee rights in that provision. In any event, we think that that was an opportunity for us to be able to clean that language up. It also provides for the total cost for the managerial plan is $16.7 million in new money.
Mr. Chair, we did, there are some other minor changes. We did add 11 new ranges in the managerial plan, but there are no, as long as we have a salary cap or pay tied to the governor's salary, there will be no one placed in those ranges, but it sort of laid out those ranges.
All right, we're on the managerial plan here. Any further discussion in that area? We need a separate motion for that.
Mr. Chair and members, we have a resolution, SER2, that would approve each of these three plans, the managerial plan, the commissioner's plan, and the plan that was previously described by Mr. Bicker.
Any questions on that? Senator Worgen or Senator Olson moves this. Senator Worgen moves the managerial
language.
As amended.
Yeah. Further discussion? Mr. Hubinger.
Just to be so that the members are clear, all three provisions, A, B, and C, would indicate that these plans have been amended by the subcommittee on December, as the plans are being approved and implemented as approved by the subcommittee, as amended by the subcommittee on December 17th.
Yes. Okay. Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you.
Yeah, I talked with Mr. Nobles a while back, and he wanted to legislative auditor visit with the committee a little bit on, I believe it's some of the salaries in his auditor's department. And I told him that we would listen, and I don't know if we probably won't act today, but I think it's important. What's happening, the way I understand it, he's going to have to make the case for it, is that they get these people, they train them, they do what we think very good work, and all of a sudden they go to the city or a county or other state agencies, and that was happening in the Minnesota Senate for the last, in my judgment, the last 10 years. I had something to do with the money that the senators doled up, and What happened is the Senate was losing good people. So finally, last year, Senator Betzel and all the senators are aware of it, we made a pretty significant jump. So we're keeping our employees. The House had already kind of corrected their stuff, quite frankly, but we were behind. So I think that's what we'll be talking about today, Senator Olson.
Mr. Chairman, what category or whose jurisdiction is the legislative auditor? The decision making for their salaries, is that the does the legislature as a whole or rules committees?
No, Mr. Chairman.
I think we'll just let Mr. Nobles. We'll give you about 10 minutes. Could you tell your story in that time?
I certainly will try, Mr. Chairman. And first, I want to thank you and the members for giving us this opportunity. And we aren't asking you for action, but I think it's important for you to be aware of our situation. And we are in a very unique situation because when the office was created in 1973, the decision was made by the legislature, and it's a matter of law, that most all of our employees are in the classified civil service, the only legislative office where that is true. And the reason for that is the nature of the function is such that it was important when the office was transferred from the executive branch, which the office used to be the public examiner, a person appointed by the governor, and that office was basically transferred into the legislative branch, and those employees had been in the classified service. And the legislature at that point really didn't have a personnel plan or a system like you do now. And so the feeling was to ensure that it would continue to be a nonpartisan, merit-based office, that most of those employees would stay in the civil service, the classified civil service. So right now, in the Office of the Legislative Auditor, we have 48 people who are covered by the commissioner's plan, 10 people covered by the managerial plans, which you just approved, and then there are four of us that are in the legislative plan. The legislative auditor, deputy, this is Cecile Furkel, by the way, deputy legislative auditor, who's with me, and then our two confidential secretaries are in the legislative plan. Now, the other part of our issue and the reason we're here is that in recent years we have experienced enormous turnover. There have been certain periods of time when turnover in our financial audit division has approached 50%. When we have been losing people that we have trained, that we need very badly to do the work that we do. I think the other thing you need to know is that we manage our human resource in the office very intensely. That's how we get our work done. We hire people and we expect them to perform at a very high level. We are very willing to use any tools that are available to us to reward good performance and punish bad, and we do that. So we are a very intensely managed organization. And basically what we've wanted are all the tools we can possibly have to fulfill that management goal. I think, frankly, the problem is not in discipline. Many people say the civil service system doesn't allow you to discipline people. It does, if as a manager you're willing to do it, and we do. The problem is we don't have enough tools to reward good performance, and that's what we're looking for. We have worked with Doer. We have worked with the commissioner and with Paul Larson a great deal, and I thank them for all of the understanding and support that they've given us. But the fact of the matter is we want more. We want more flexibility to reward good performance. Now, you just heard that there is some flexibility in the commissioner's plan and managerial plan, and there is, and we will use it. But we want to be able to go out and recruit people and put them where we think their merit deserves within the salary range that is established. And not to have to go to Doer as much as we do and plead our case and take weeks and months for a decision to be made by Doer about how we're going to manage our office. And that really is where the rub is. It's not so much in the plans. We would like more flexibility in the plans themselves. And we had drafted an addendum that we asked the commissioner to support. And we met with the commissioner last week, and we did not get that support. And so we are not presenting that addendum to you today. But over time, going forward, we would like to work with you and Doer, if they're willing, to create greater flexibility so that we as managers can fulfill our responsibility to have a strong and effective audit organization for you, the legislature, and the people of this state. And again, what we're asking for is more flexibility, not necessarily more money, but more flexibility as managers to manage our human resource. And we frankly don't feel we get the kind of support from DOER that we need. DOER basically defends and supports the system. And we have to fit within that system. And we're willing to live by the rules, but we would just like more flexibility on individual decisions that we make about hiring people, promoting people, so that when we find somebody that we really want, we can bring them in at the salary level that they're willing to come in at, and that we can promote them when they're doing really good work. Not because they've been there the 5 years or the 10 years that DOER says they should be there, but maybe they've only been there 2 years. And we think they're doing great work, and we as the managers want to promote them, and I don't think we should have to be at the sufferance of DOER to say yes or no. That's basically our case, Mr. Chairman and members. Ms. Ferkel, who's the deputy in the Financial Audit Division, has struggled with this issue, I think, more in the last several years than any deputy I've ever had. It really does consume a large part of our time and energy to try to deal with personnel issues. And I don't know if, Cecile, you want to add anything, but we'd be happy to answer your questions, Mr. Chairman.
Questions over Senator Betzel.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, you know, normally with most agencies and organizations, you know, they should work through the system, try to resolve things before they bring them to us. This is a unique situation because the legislative auditor answers to the legislature, but yet they've got a situation where they have to go back to the executive branch to get approval for their policies that are ultimately going to affect how they're going to be able to do their job. And in fact, their job usually involves auditing parts of the executive branch. So I think that, you know, we have to be very careful and make sure that we're exercising our responsibility with the auditor's office. And if it means that, you know, we need more direct involvement in helping them resolve this issue, I think that's appropriate. Yeah, again, other agencies and so forth, they should go through DOER, but the auditors, I think, in a different category.
Mr. Chairman,
I think Senator Betzel makes a good point. I think this is, in my judgment, a different situation. But go ahead, Senator.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Betzel, if I could just respond to that. You know, one option for us is to simply get out of the civil service system and not be under DOER. But I think, frankly, you as a legislature ought to be able to use that state system for this office if it's appropriate, and carve out a way that can work for us with the flexibility we need, but that our employees can still have the protection of the civil service system. That's what we tried to do. But if that doesn't work, we certainly are prepared to work with you to get out of that system and come over totally into the legislative system. But I will only caution you that, again, we are going to want the flexibility and tools we need to manage in a very intense, high-performance way. And so we will bring the same set of needs and expectations into the legislative plan that we have for this plan. Frankly, I think what we're asking for and what we have asked for from DOER over the years is ought to be the model, not just for us, but I think it's the great failing in the state system that managers are not given the tools they need. And here's a place where it could happen, where the commissioner writes this plan, both the managerial plan and the commissioner's plan. It doesn't have to be negotiated. And why is it not the model to give managers the kinds of tools and flexibilities they need to get high performance and set those expectations and reward it?
Okay. Senator Workin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Nobles, I do think you seem to run a tight ship, and you do certainly turn out the work in a timely manner and very nice work. But what you just said, the last little piece where you said all the managers should have this freedom, that's kind of the danger, if you will, in giving it to one area, because you can bet that it won't be long before many others will be at the table saying exactly what you're saying. And so that's where my hesitation comes, because I do believe that this is one thing that, should we do it, would open floodgates. So I think we need to consider it very carefully before we... I'll grant you that the OLA is different, mm-hmm. but at the same time, there are a lot of old sayings that would go with things like this, you know, like the nose under the camel, the camel's nose under the tent, and everything else. And I think that potential does exist if we make this change. So I would please ask okay. that we proceed with extreme caution.
Yeah, that's what they were.
And I understand,
trying to make the
Chairman,
case.
Senator Worgen, and I understand that is the caution that Doar brings when we ask for what we ask for, is that if we give it to you, we'll need to give it to others. And I recognize that. But all I can do is represent the office that I'm responsible for, and we need these tools. When you're trying to run an office and meet the expectations that we have to meet, and you are facing 50% turnover in your staff, you have a crisis.
Senator Olson?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think that if we consider doing something differently, you do need to determine what distinguishes this situation from the others, because it is precedent. It can be precedent-setting. Yeah. And if you're, in fact, going to change the oversight or to the legislature or whatever, I think we need to examine that whole thing carefully, because it does have consequences, and we should be sure that those consequences are the direction that we want to go.
Yeah, we're going to be very deliberate and slow on this, and I think Senator Betzel tried to start the conversation about what's different here. And maybe we need to continue on that theme, Mr. Nobles, and continue to educate the members here why, Senator Worgen, Senator Olson, why this is different, why it's unique. And we're not going to probably make that case today, but Senator Olson.
Looks like the commissioner may
want
to have
a word. That's where I was going next.
Thank you. I'll just make a few more comments. The state auditor's office, the attorney general, the secretary of state, also have to have their plans approved through DOER and follow the same. So there are lots of examples of other entities that you could make an argument for that shouldn't be under DOER. I think what you've seen is I've come into this position, and I can tell you, as I told Mr. Nobles, I used to fight with DOER and hate dealing with DOER because I had to have things approved, too, through DOER. And so I understand the problems, and we're trying to work through them. Many of them are built around the fact that this is a civil service system. We also have incredible compression issues. The unions have been in discussions with me. It's affecting some of their members, and we have to do something about that in state government. And that's something that the legislature will need to debate and discuss, hopefully over the next, in a fairly near period of time, because that is what's causing a lot of these issues. I would hope that we can have a discussion over the next year about all of these issues and how do we want to look at how we manage employees. Do we want to... have more flexibility. We tried to put a little bit into this plan, but still keeping the same civil service, I guess, mentality or that sort of thing within the commission and the managerial plans. But I can tell you these problems that Mr. Nobles is discussing are real. They're very real. They exist in his office and other offices that hire those folks. They exist with our scientists. They exist with our medical personnel, they exist with our managers. It's very difficult to get someone to take a supervisory position, to move from a MAPE class into an MMA because the pay is the same or very similar. It's hard. So these are very real issues, and what he's talking about is very real. So I would hope, again, that as you get into a very busy legislative session, that this could be an issue that we really talk about.
Representative De La Force.
Well, Mr. Chairman, real quick, I think the commissioner makes a good point here. I now, after some years with the subcommittee, we've got an issue with more than the legislative auditor. I mean, I'm coming increasingly to the conclusion that our pay system is broken and getting to the point where it may need to be completely overhauled. And I know that's an issue for another day, but perhaps we ought to be thinking beyond just the office of the OLA here, which does excellent work, about what's happening in state period. We've got county government starting to poach our state employees. We've got a bunch of employees who are about to retire, so there is an opportunity for some significant reform. So maybe it's this body, but my point would be, at least in the limited time today, Mr. Chairman, perhaps we ought to think about convening a group, either this body or some of us, to think about completely overhauling the way we compensate our state employees. It's getting to be broken. How often do we see? Today we've got the zoo coming before us, for example, and we hear about people leaving, and the system's broken, in my opinion. So hopefully maybe we can look at starting to reform it going forward. Thank you.
Good points. Thank you. And you're right. The next discussion will be kind of along this line, too, with the zoo people, and they're going to make a pretty good argument that I've heard before. And thank you very much, folks. Mr. Harry Hainsworth, Chair of the Board of Directors of the Minnesota Zoological Gardens. We were just... good morning. I was just at the zoo about a week ago, and it's coming along pretty well with the new exhibit, and you're doing very good things out there, I might add. I wasn't saying all of that about 10, 12 years ago, but I'm a believer now, and that you guys are really going in the right direction. So welcome to the committee, and you may make your case. I think it has something to do with the salary of the executive director, so...
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. We have a request. It's a simple request, I hope, and that is to eliminate from the legislation that governs the zoo the provision that maximizes the salary of the executive director at 130% of the governor's salary. Now, the current statute also says that any amount that's over 95% of the governor's salary has to come from non-state sources. We do not propose to change that at all. We simply propose to eliminate the 130% cap on the salary. And at the present time, the current executive director, who has done an absolutely superb job since he's been in that office, has not had a raise in 3 years. And in terms, this is a national market that we're concerned with here, because there are only a limited number of people who have the right qualifications to be a director of a zoo like this agency is. And at the present time, this salary is the second lowest of any major zoo in the United States of America. More than that, if you put it in perspective, it's about 30 to 40% below the average or the median for zoo directors of approximately equivalent size zoos in the United States. And even if you were to look at other cultural institutions within Minnesota, it is significantly below the average or median for that as well. This would not involve any additional state funds at all. The amount of state, this would be no appropriation difference whatsoever. All it would be is allowing the zoo to get the salary over a period of time up to the level that it would be a competitive salary. And the money would come from non-state sources. It would come from the Foundation for the Zoo, which is a 501c3 organization. So that's our proposal, Mr. Chair.
Tell the committee just a little bit about the public-private situation that the zoo has, and how much private money you generate, and how much in endowments and things of that nature. To
all right, so we currently the zoo's budget's about $19.3 million, roughly in that vicinity. Of that, $7 million is from state appropriated funds. So less than 40% would be from state appropriated funds. The rest of the money comes from either what you call auxiliary operations, such as food operations and things of that nature, and from gate receipts from people who come to the zoo, either as a family membership or pay the zoo when they come in. We also have a very substantial amount of private money that's raised through fundraising activities. Right now, it's about $1 million. We are in the midst of a capital campaign where we're trying to raise from private sources about $25 to $30 million, somewhere in that range. And that's still in a very quiet stage, but it's been very successful. And that, over the years, will, of course, have to increase. So the private fundraising activities of the zoo will increase substantially over the years. And if you look at it from the executive director, actually, when Lee Emke, who is the executive director, came here, his job description didn't even include fundraising as part of his responsibilities. Since that time, obviously, we've gotten involved in that. And so, in effect, you could look at this as he is the president of the foundation as well as being the executive director of the zoo. You could really look at this as being a way of actually giving him compensation for the work he's doing for the foundation as the president of the foundation.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I wonder, Mr. Hainsworth, if you can... You know about these other communities and their zoos. Are they almost all part of state funding?
No, ma'am.
And do they, any of them, deal with the same kind of handicap we have in Minnesota, that what I call a goofy law about being a percentage of the governor's salary? I can't remember how many states. Is it us alone, Mr. Hibinger?
That caps the commissioners at 95% of the. I don't know that answer.
Senator Scheid, Mr. Chair, the only one that's the equivalent to us would be the North Carolina Zoo. They are a state agency. All these others are not state agencies. Some of them are connected with the municipality, get some support that way. But North Carolina would be the only one that would be another state zoo. And I don't know whether North Carolina has the same limitation, but I do know that the executive director of the North Carolina Zoo is paid about $40,000 to $50,000 more than Minnesota, and it's a smaller operation in terms of their overall budget.
Thank you.
Incidentally, I will mention one other thing. Mr. Emke is in a position where he is in very high demand from other zoos across the country, and he's received several offers in the last few years from other zoos, both in the United States and elsewhere, and these have all been at salary levels that are astronomically different from where we are right here. And fortunately, we've been able to keep him here, and I hope we can keep him here for some additional years, but this is a very different situation from what exists in the rest of the world.
Yeah. Oh, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, do we need a motion for this? Is there?
Yes, we would if we're.
You know, I was at the zoo with you, and the good news is they didn't keep us.
Cage. They'd put us in a cage. Huh?
And then we were at Como Park. Earlier this, or well, just a week ago, and I'm becoming convinced that our zoos are going to be one of the last refuges for some species. I mean, what's happening around the world with some of God's creatures is pretty alarming, and we need to be sure that those zoos are as close to replicating the habitat of those animals as it can be, and we. It's really important work, as far as I'm concerned, for the future. And I think this is, well, I think our law is outrageous anyway. And so I would, if there's language, and I guess it has to do with amending in Chapter 85A, is that? I'm sorry, it's on page 4 here. Oh, I'm sorry, that's what you're trying to tell me.
Yeah, page four of the of the Briggs handout has you.
I read everything else, but I didn't get
language.
So,
I think this, like,
but I'd like to move that.
The last issue. I mean, we're they've all got to be very, in my judgment, very tight. We just can't open up the gates and just be doing these willy nilly. But they've made the case to me on this one. But I, again, I repeat, we're not going to be trying to run this whole thing through this committee, but certainly it's a case-by-case thing here. And it's not to be meant that every next week somebody else is coming in and blah, blah, blah. But I think because of the public-private and the salaries that you're losing good people, so we have to look at it. Senator Betzel.
Well, you're correct, Mr. Chair. It's a case-by-case matter. However, the cases keep piling up.
That's a problem.
You know,
could be a problem.
I represent the city of Blaine, and they're trying to do a nationwide search for a new city manager, and they're running into the cap problem. And as I understand the history of this, is that at one point the governor's salary is so far out there that it wasn't considerable that anybody would even approach it. Well, that's not the case anymore. And we could either raise the governor's salary, and the governor doesn't have to accept it, but we could raise it, and that would eliminate the problem, or get rid of the cap. But I think we have to do something. It's a different issue for a different day, but there, we just keep hearing too many issues, and at some point we're going to have to figure out what we're going to do in a broader policy here.
Yeah, I mean, you think that 95% is the end of the world, but it's not. I mean, in Inverter Whites are trying to get a city manager, and quite frankly, salary's a big deal. Yeah. You know, and you're not probably going to get the people that quality people at that level anymore, but it's an issue that we have to look at. But Representative
Chairman, Mr. Chair, I agree with you that we don't want to open the floodgates. This is a specific situation where I would, if we were doing this for commissioners, where we were allowing private funds to be raised over 95%, I would have serious concerns about, and I hope we would never do that. But for this situation, I would be supportive of it.
I agree. I just caution, we're not going to be, this is not a test where we're going to be doing this
Mr. Chairman.
Every day around here, if I'm around, or if I have one vote anyway. But Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, this is one of those areas in state government, and I don't know if there's more than a handful or not, but we expect them to run as a business. They're required to. And yet, you know, I mean, I don't like it that they have to raise it privately, just for a public employee salary to depend on the ability of people to, you know, to contribute, make donations. But I think so that, I mean, that makes it, I think, not difficult to support doing it in terms of the dollars here. But it is one of those places where we expect good management. We expect excellent management, and I think we're seeing that today at the zoo, and so I wholeheartedly support my motion.
That's good. That's a good thing.
Secretary Senator Worgen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. Is this the only instance in which we would totally lift the cap?
Yeah. Now, this is a...
So there is no other exception in law currently that totally...
There are a number of other situations where you don't have the cap has been lifted over a period of years.
Superintendent.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Humager.
There are a couple of areas where the ranges are set in different ways. For example, the Chancellor of Minsky, this subcommittee approves a plan that includes the salary range, but the board sets that salary anywhere within that range. I think that range went up last July to $380,000. I'm not sure it's in that range. I'm trying to remember how the salary for the director of the Historical Society is set. That's not a state agency, but that's another example of an agency that is perceived as part of state government, that where the salaries are set considerably higher. Senator Worgen and Senator Betzel referred to the salary cap earlier that applies to the employees of local governments. We've exempted employees of school districts.
Yeah, they're out. They can go where they want, can't they?
Representative Lilly, he wants to put on the compensation for the legislators on this, but I totally recommend that.
Is that a friendly amendment?
Yeah. probably not to your voters. All right. I caution this body and everybody else to go real slow in these areas, but I think this is one that the person we have out there now is just wonderful. And I know what's going on out there. I think I do. Not totally, but... So any further discussion on the Scheid motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
That's all we have. That's all I have on the agenda. Is there anything else to be brought up? Are we meeting Wednesday on something? No.
Mr. Chair, no, the Legislative Coordinating Commission.
Oh, the LCC is meeting Wednesday. Okay. Anything else to come before the...
Mr. Chair, Mr. Larson indicated the two contracts that they're negotiating that they are in final stages with. We also have the faculty contracts at MNSCU that are in the process of negotiations and I believe going to mediation. It's unclear that we'll get those MNSCU contracts before the session begins. So we may not have a meeting before February 12th.
All right. Anything else to report?
Mr. Chair, I'll move to adjourn.
Merry Christmas.
Oh, yes, Merry Christmas, yeah.
Mr. Chair, I'll move to adjourn the meeting.
Okay, all those in favor, or do you want to stick around here? Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails. Did y'all get your sheets in here?
Betsy, could you give
Jim? Thank you. I thought it was a good meeting, good conversation. Everybody was here?
Yeah.
Class members. Missing one, I think.
That is noteworthy. Whoa.